Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and creative entrepreneur, bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information on writing, publishing options, and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free author blueprint, and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 388 of the podcast. And it's Friday, 10th of August, 2018, as I record this. So today I have a really interesting interview on tips for self-publishing and marketing a children's book with Karen Inglis. And I know many of you write books for children, and I get asked about this all the time. And of course, I don't do it myself. So Karen's going to tell you all about it, and she has a new book out about it as well. So we're talking about that. Now, I know some of you don't write books for children, so you might skip this episode. So I wanted to pull out a bit of a nugget in the interview about using Amazon ads for print books, because Karen has gone from, you know, maybe selling hundreds to selling thousands of print books using Amazon advertising by directly targeting print books by big name children's authors. Now, with my futurist hat on, what I've seen, I think, with the rise of Amazon ads and paid advertising in general in the indie publishing space is that, you know, indies really have gouged out a large proportion of traditional publishing sales in the ebook space, but we haven't really made much of an impact in the print space. But this to me is a bit of a game changer, especially if you're using KDP print. Then you can use Amazon ads directly for your print books, and this is fascinating. So my little futurist head says, fast forward a few months or a few years, and we will see some gouging of print sales as well from traditional publishing, because of course we can go in and change our pricing on print to make an extra dollar or so, so that we can, you know, have enough profit margin for advertising, which is definitely what I'm focusing on. I'm doing advertising on print because at the moment, there's less advertising on it. But of course, now I've talked about it, so things may well change. It is interesting. I've definitely sparked a large print resurgence. Well, I haven't. I mentioned it, and you guys have started a large print resurgence. Lots of people getting into large print now. So hopefully we're just expanding the market as we go, which is fantastic. So interesting times indeed. We do talk about that in the interview, probably towards the end. So you can always check that out. Even if you don't read, if you don't write children's books, you may still find this interesting. So my personal update, I have, I had a bit of a big spurt on Valley of Dry Bones, a lot of dictation, and now I had to take a bit of a pause this week because I'm mainly a pantser. I know I seem quite organized sometimes with my research, but because this book, it now, like seriously, this book now spans the Spanish Empire, what was the Spanish Empire, and it's pretty massive. So I got the idea in New Orleans and San Francisco, where of course the Spanish were active in both places in the 18th century. And then also now the book will be in Equatorial Guinea in Africa. It'll be in the Philippines. It'll be in Peru and Spain, of course. So this is one of my real international spanning arcane thrillers, and is, you know, if you haven't read any of my thrillers, you can start with any of my arcane books. They're all standalone as well. So Valley of Dry Bones, I had to sort of map out the rest of the book because I lost the plot a little bit, but now I know where I'm going. So the next week I will be getting back into that high word count again. So that's kind of how my creative process works. I kind of muddle through with my pantsing process, and then I stop and go, okay, where's this going? And then I do the replotting, and I just did that on one A4 piece of paper, and I did some diagrams. I do pictures and, you know, arrows going everywhere. So that is And I've got the cover, so very soon I will be, and I can't really do the blurb until I've finished the plot. So now I know the plot, I'm going to sort all that out in the coming weeks. So that's fun. Then in nonfiction, very interestingly, so a while back I talked about Great on Kindle, which is Amazon's new beta program for high quality nonfiction ebooks, which is you can't even apply for this. It's personally curated. And I got an email, and How to Market a Book is in this program. As I said, I did not apply for it. It just has happened. And that's really interesting. So we'll see. I will let you know if it has any tangible impact on sales. But yeah, we will see. But I was quite surprised to get that email, because I think How to Market a Book is quite niche. But there we go. We shall see. Okay, so moving into useful stuff, quite a few things this week. First of all, two things in the authorsphere as such. The Story Studio podcast, if you haven't listened to that before, it's relatively new, but it used to be the self-publishing podcast with Johnny, Sean and Dave. They pivoted to the Story Studio podcast a couple of months ago. And this week's show is really interesting. I don't always listen to the show, but I love the boys. I've been friends with them. I actually did some of Johnny B. Truant's courses back when he was, before he ever wrote a book. So I love those guys. So I was listening to the podcast and it's so interesting. Johnny talks about creative burnout, about losing his mojo, and also the guys talk about working on the wrong things. And because we've had a bit of a theme of refocusing, I think this is a very interesting show to listen to. I do, and a couple of you have asked me about the difference between a startup, you know, a startup author, so someone who's just getting started, and then a more mature author business. And I think what you're seeing right now with what's happening with me, what's happening with Johnny, Sean and Dave, you're seeing what happens with a mature business, in that we try and do too much and then we have to stop and we have to refocus. Whereas when you're starting out, you feel like there's no opportunities. So you have to kind of grab for lots of different opportunities because you're just starting. And then as you become more, and when I say mature, I mean mature business, as in been going a while. Johnny and Sean and Dave are certainly also coming up to sort of, certainly Sean and Dave are coming up for 10 years co-writing together, I think. So what you're seeing really is when you're starting out, you're fighting for attention and fighting for opportunity, and you are trying to write books in your backlist. And then when you have, sort of 10 years down the line, you may have gone too wide with your opportunities, as I probably have, jumping into lots of different things. Certainly Johnny, Sean and Dave have done that too. And then you're having to start to cull things and prune things to focus yourself in the right direction. So really interesting to think about the difference between an author starting out and authors who've been going a while. And actually, I'll be sort of returning to this next week, because I'm talking to Chris Rush about branding and also pivoting your brand. And so that's coming up next week. I'll mention that again later. So that's the Story Studio podcast. And as ever, I will link to all this in the show notes. The second useful thing, if you use WordPress, this is a big update that is coming. Gutenberg, you might have heard some rumors about Gutenberg. It's definitely a big change in the way that the WordPress design works. You don't have to use it. You can opt to stay with the classical design, but I think that obviously what happens with these things is eventually they turn off the old way. Now, I wanted to know about the impact on my blogs, particularly on The Creative Pen and jfpen.com. So I asked Nate Hofelder at The Digital Reader, who does great WordPress help. He occasionally helps me with my sites, and he does help for authors. Also has the Digital Reader blog, which is all about the industry. And Nate was wonderful and actually wrote a whole article that is very useful about Gutenberg. So you can go to The Digital Reader, well, it's got dashes in, but just Google The Digital Reader, Gutenberg, WordPress, and you'll find that article. Or again, show notes, link in the show notes. So really useful. It made me feel better to see what that means. And most of you will be on WordPress. If certainly if you're on self-hosted like I am, then you will want to know about this.
And then very fun, useful stuff. I'm looking forward to this. I always enjoy my friend Nick Stevenson, who many of you will know from Your First 10K Readers. Nick and I are doing a webinar together. We do these a couple of times a year and I always enjoy it. Nick is a very funny guy and I always have a gin and tonic and we have some banter. Nick does a great webinar. We have a live Q&A. We have a bit of a laugh and you also get a whole load of really useful information. So the webinar will be on the three-step system to automate your author marketing and find your first 10,000 readers, mainly about how to build and grow your email list, as well as the four reasons why readers are not buying your books. And that will be on this week, Thursday, 16th of August, 3 p.m. US Eastern, 8 p.m. UK. And of course, as ever, if you register, you'll get the replay within 24 hours. So you can register for that at thecreativepen.com/August16 AUGUST16. So thecreativepen.com/August16, links in the show notes as ever. And that will be a really useful but also fun session. And as I said, I'm looking forward to that. I don't do many of these live things, as you know, but I always enjoy doing it with Nick and I always get notes myself. So that is coming up. So thanks for all your emails and tweets this week. As ever, I love to hear from you. Let me know what you're doing while you're listening to the show. And also, if you found anything particularly useful, you can always tweet me at The Creative Pen with a double N. And I also have a new Twitter account at JF Pen Writer as well, which is super fun. So a few tweets. Ginger Linton says, just heard the Scripps Medic, which was Sam's interview about injuries. So Ginger says, thank you, ladies. You got me excited about writing again. So that's really, really great. Suzanne Cass, talking about Julie Huss and Jonathan McLean's interview, said, I love this interview. Two such amazing people. I totally agree. And really wishing Julie and Jonathan a lot of success with their studio pitch, which is fun. Edwin Downward says, listening to The Creative Pen while accidentally hanging laundry. I don't know how you can accidentally hang laundry. as my wife rushes to work on a contract she's been working to build for months now, and sent me a lovely picture of the garden. And Karen Codner says, running and listening to how to get reviews for your book on Patreon. And then, which reminded me, if you are a Patreon supporter, you're now getting extra midweek audios, either little things from just me, or obviously the monthly Q&A you get extra every month, and also any other interviews I do on a special Patreon feed, which is good. Drew Emery says, just a note of appreciation. Your interview with Stephen Pressfield is the perfect example of how you capture everything from the ephemeral to the practical. It's like the ultimate nutrition for the writer's mind. Oh, thank you, Drew. That was very sweet of you to say. I'm glad you enjoy the show. And to Jed Cusack, who says, just listened to the episode and purchased Foolproof Outline and Foolproof Dictation by Christopher Downing. Saturday afternoon, time to dive into the books. And which is so funny because, of course, I love having people on the show. I love learning from people. But also, podcasts do sell books, and so they continue to be very good marketing. I don't know whether I would say especially for nonfiction, but it's certainly easier to target nonfiction listeners with a podcast. So something to keep in mind for your own book marketing, getting on podcasts is a really good idea. Right, so today's show is sponsored by Ingram Spark, and this is actually a great sponsorship match because Karen uses Ingram Spark for her books, as I do as well. And in fact, as I reported recently about my revenue split, Ingram Spark is the reason that my print revenue share increased from 10% from my total book sales, doubling to 21% of my book sales income this year from print. Also, how to market a book ended up in the Edinburgh Blackwells in Scotland without me even pitching them because of the discounting you can do with Ingram Spark. And this is the thing that I think people don't realise, is that obviously direct to customers than just publishing your print books on Amazon with KDP Print, for example, is completely fine. But if you want bookstores, universities, colleges, libraries, schools, anywhere that actually needs to buy in bulk or buy with a discount so they can actually make money, you need to go through Ingram Spark. And you, so most of us now, well, I say most of us, many of us with the more developed businesses use KDP Print for Amazon and or CreateSpace. And remember, CreateSpace is not gone completely yet. You can still use it. But I now use, I have moved all my books over. So I now use KDP Print for Amazon and Ingram Spark for my extended distribution. I have multiple print editions now. I do normal paperbacks, workbooks, large print editions. They also do hardbacks. And you can sell in hundreds of different venues worldwide and a lot of different countries. You can also bulk order author copies at a great price or get bulk discounts, as the lovely Dave Hendrickson discussed in episode 377, talking about ordering books for schools, as I guess Karen does in this interview too. So if you want to get your books into these other places, then you definitely want to be using Ingram Spark for your extended distribution. They have fantastic help, and they also have a fantastic podcast called Go Publish Yourself, which says a lot about their sense of humour. And I love Robin and everyone and Andy and everyone over at Ingram. So it's your content. Do more with it through ingramspark.com. Right. Thanks also to everyone supporting the show on Patreon. Thanks to new patrons, Linda McNabb, Natalie Hawke, Felicity Griffin Clark, Adrian Lance, Stephen Davidson, Steve Jones, Darice Clark, Ginger Linton, and Sally Stevenson. Thank you so much, everyone. I really do appreciate your support on Patreon. Like your tweets and emails, it demonstrates you enjoy the show and want it to continue. And in fact, the more patrons I get, the more happy I get about doing this show. So you get all the extra stuff I put on the Patreon feed, and I will be doing the extra Q&A this week. So that will be done. You can put your questions into the mix if you are a patron, and you can support the show with just a couple of dollars a month or a couple more extra if you like. And you can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/ The Creative Pen. Right, let's get on with the interview with Karen. Today, I'm here with Karen Inglis. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Jo. How are you?
I'm good. It's great to have you back on the show 4 years later, which is amazing.
And we don't look any different, do we?
No, in fact, I think we look better. But just a little introduction for those of you who don't know Karen. Karen is the author of books for children, including The Secret Lake and Eek, The Runaway Alien, as well as Book Apps. Her latest book, which I know many of you will be very excited about, is How to Self-Publish and Market a Children's Book. And Karen, I've been bugging you about this for years, so I'm so happy you've got this book out. But just start off by telling us a bit more about you and your writing journey, and also what has changed for you since 2014.
Okay. My writing journey really started when my children were young. So I was a professional writer. I've been a copywriter for many years for the financial services industry. And when I was having my, when the children were at home and I was not working full time, that was how I got into children's writing, because I was reading to the children and seeing some great stories like Harry McClary, but also some not good, such good stories, and thinking, oh, I could have a go at this. And so that's how I actually got into writing to begin with. I obviously tried to get my stories published in the beginning and had the usual thing of rejections. And they all went back. I had one called Ferdinand Fox and the Hedgehog and The Secret Lake, and they got turned down and they went back in a wooden box for 10 years. And then I got them out again in 2010 when I had a sabbatical from my work. I had a whole year off and did a lot of editing. And that was the time that self-publishing was coming around and CreateSpace. And so I think you were pretty much the only other person I knew in the industry who was English, although you were in Australia doing it. That's when I actually started looking into it and decided I'm not going to send it out again this time. I'm going to do it myself.
So 2014, you had a couple of books out. I think you were doing an app around then. You'd started doing apps. So what have you been doing since then?
So I have, well, the app, I no longer market the app, and that's very, very recent. And I would say to anybody, just in case that's a question in their mind, I would just say, go with caution with apps. They're very, very, I actually have sold over 550, which apparently is a very good number to have, but you've got to keep up with the platform changes. And it's not really a priority for me. It costs quite a lot to get it done in the first place. But it was an experiment that I wanted to do. But that you also, once you have a book app, you have to pay Apple £79 a year just to have it on the platform, never mind keeping up with any changes that they make. So I reluctantly just this year have pulled it, and that was only because now it was going to require updating, and I just thought, well, I can't justify the cost because I'm not selling enough to justify that. So rather than go down the app route, since you and I have both spoken, I've come out with I've got more children's books out now. I've got 6 books altogether. So I've got obviously the first Ferdinand Fox story, which I had when we spoke probably, and The Secret Lake and Eek. I've now got Henry Haynes and The Great Escape, Walter Brown and The Magician's Hat, and Ferdinand Fox and the Hedgehog, which is another picture book in the same series. And those I have out in print and in ebooks. I've continued to go into lots of schools. I think I was probably visiting schools when we first came around. And I would just say, you know, to anybody, you really, if you're going to write for children, you need to get out there and meet your readers, because most children read in print, and most children's book sales are in print. And unless you're very well known, that's going to be the main way that you start to sell to begin with. Things have changed recently, and there's more sort of hope in terms of marketing online. But you need really to have, I would say, where that's been most successful for me is where I've got the book with good reviews, good organic reviews that I've built up over time. And those have come around as a result of my going out and doing school visits. And I've also, and by the way, those school visits by the beginning of this year had garnered me something like 4,000 copies in print of The Secret Lake sold. I'd then already sold another 2,000 or 3,000 online between print and ebook. So I was already at 7,000 sales of those, and probably up to about 12,000 sales all round by the beginning of this year. And that's now jumped up again with more online sales recently, which we'll no doubt come on to talk about.
That's fascinating, and you've touched on a number of things that we're going to get more in depth in this interview. So people listening going, oh, but I want to know more about that, we're going to come back to it. But first of all, I want to start with the question of age, because people go, oh, I'm writing a book for children. I mean, even you, these books you've just mentioned, age bracket is huge. I mean, we all know the difference between a little wooden block book for a, you know, a 2-year-old or whatever, a 1-year-old. And then, you know, what it, I guess child goes all the way up to 16, I guess.
Technically, I'd say if you say you're writing for children, you're writing up to age 12. But one of the biggest mistakes you could potentially make is to not know what age group you're writing for. And I would say, and I talk about this in my book, it's that there are three sort of key age groups, I suppose. There's sort of 0 to 5, which is in your sort of picture book, and there you've got sort of between 0 and 1,000 words with an average, an ideal of 500 or fewer words. You've then got chapter books, which are really for early readers, and so those will be aimed at age 5 to 7, and those will have a different word count, typically between 1,000 words and 6,000 words. And then you've got what is now being adopted as this term, middle grade novel, which is for ages 8 to 12, and that can be sort of between 20 and 40,000 words, and mostly doesn't require any illustration, but you might find some Christmas riddle puts illustrations in his goth girl books and things like that. So those are the sort of three broad categories. And I, you know, and anyone says to me, oh, I'm writing a book for children, my first question would be, what age group is it aimed at? Because so many things flow out of that, which is not just the book length, but it's going to be the level of language that you use, the sort of themes you might be covering, and also the actual format of the book. Will it need illustrations? Will it not? How big will the font size be? Will it be ragged right or will it be justified? What will the line spacing be? I mean, there's some very quite, you know, there's some quite subtle differences which make all the difference between getting it right and getting it wrong, I suppose, when you're writing for children. And so it's knowing your target market, and that's broadly how it falls.
It's so interesting because I would think that middle grade fits into many of the other discussions I have. It's text-based. It looks like, I mean, obviously the writing style is different, but and in terms of self-publishing, you can self-publish it in that way. But the children's book in print, so when we're talking about heavy illustration, which is expensive, or we're talking about premium paper, or we're talking about, you know, hardback distribution in bookstores, it seems to me that children's book publishing is expensive and difficult. So can you talk about the print publishing side of kids' books? And people think, oh, I'm going to do a kids' book. It'll be in hardback. It'll look gorgeous and it'll go in a bookstore. So is that right? You know, what are the issues there?
Well, I would say that getting into a bookstore, I wouldn't think that will be should be your priority other than getting into your local bookshop, because unless you've got a national marketing team behind you, it's the same as actually any other self-published author. It doesn't matter which age group you're writing for, adult, young adult. Unless people know you, they're not going to be walking into stores around the UK saying, you know, they want to buy your book. Therefore, that shouldn't be your focus. Your focus with those paperback books is to get them potentially into your local bookshops, ideally into your local bookshops, but also into the hands of your readers that you're going to meet at going out to live events and typically school events. Now, what can happen over time if that works well and you do it properly and you follow all the rules that you and I know that we all should follow, which is using editors, doing it professionally, you can start to build your author brand and get known. And the more you get known, the more other bookshops might actually welcome you, because they've had parents coming in locally. So for example, and I think this might have already been underway when we spoke last time, I have, during my early years, I've been in 6 or 7 branches of Waterstones doing book signings there and selling a lot of books with them. And that was on the back of the fact I built up my brand locally through schools. And then one Waterstones heard about me through another one. But that was, you know, I live in London and there are lots of bookshops within a close range of each other. But I don't think that's typical. So I think with your print, you'll start doing print on demand using, you know, either CreateSpace, well, the combination ideally of CreateSpace and Ingram Spark, I'd say. Get your school stock or your short run stock from Ingram Spark, or sorry, KDP Print. We now know everyone's getting moved over there. And I don't know, I'm assuming, just do the sums to see whether KDP Print is cheaper to get your books for home stock or whether Ingram Spark is. So you would get maybe a small stock to start with, use that for your local events to begin with. What can then happen is, you know, and again, I sort of cover this in more detail in the book, is if you're finding you're building your brand up and are selling a lot, which I have. So I was typically ordering 200 copies of The Secret Lake at a time from Ingram Spark. There are other ways that you can maybe get a slightly cheaper run. That might be the point at which you go to short run digital printers, and perhaps you'll find that the per item cost is lower that way. Now, actually, I've only recently turned to doing that because of the success The Secret Lake has recently had online, and I wanted to make sure that if bookshops wider than round the corner started ordering it, that it was showing in stock. So I've gone through another route using Clays for that. But that's only very, very recently. It's the kind of thing I'd say, you know, do it gradually, even though you might be able to get a big order at a cheaper price through a second supplier. How many plates do you want to be spinning in those early days in terms of, you know, because you're going to have to come up with a separate load of files for that third printer. Sort of do it gradually is what I'd say. And I think, you know, people probably will find it. It's one of those things, organically growing is the best way.
Yeah. And but I just want to come back on the illustration, because you mentioned there, like, that what you described there was kind of straight print on demand publishing. But what are the issues with children's books that have full color illustration?
In terms of print,
you know? Yeah, which a lot of, you know, those younger 0 to 5, I would have thought a lot more people would want that.
So So something I came across early on was, I didn't realise until the last minute, that print on demand doesn't do the silk finish paper, which is a slightly thicker paper that you know a lot of those picture books have. And so I therefore did go out and source an upfront print run through a company, and it was quite scary because I started off ordering 100, and you know, it wasn't that economic, and in the end I ended up ordering 500, and I'd sold 500 that way. Now, interestingly, because most of my picture book sales, and this will apply to most self-published children's authors, they're going to either happen at school events, or they will come off Amazon or somewhere. And actually the parents don't mind about the paper, because actually I say in my, and I've said it on my blog that's live now, and I say it again in the book, the quality of the paper that you do get from print on demand for colour is actually very nice. And when I decided to go and get an advanced print run and pay a bit more to have silk finish, several people I showed the book to said, well, why are you bothering to do that? It's fine. And actually the reason I was doing it was because I wanted it to sit comfortably alongside other books in the bookshops. But then if you think about what I've just been saying about bookshops, that's really a few copies in your local bookshop. Parents really don't mind. I mean, as long as you've done a good quality book, and the quality of the paper is good. So I would say, actually, whereas once upon a time I said that, I thought that was a problem, I'd in the last few years, you know, updating my blog to say, actually, on balance, I would, you know, I don't think you need to do it unless you're absolutely hell-bent on getting into lots of bookshops.
That's good advice. And it's kind of, it's that ego thing, isn't it? It's basically saying, well, I'm expecting this to sit next to this book in a bookstore, whereas that's not, you know, that might happen, but that's a tiny part of what the sales will be. So just, again, sort of coming back on the cost for the illustrations, again, some people might not realise that you have to pay an illustrator up front for these picture books. So how have you managed that? What are your recommendations for finding an illustrator, and you know, maybe some idea of the upfront costs when you're doing a picture book?
Well, there are lots of online places you can go and look for illustrators, and there's a huge variety of costs that you can go for. So you've got all the websites like Fiverr.com, I think 99 Designs I hear people have used. I found my illustrator, who's in Bosnia and has been, we've worked together ever since, through what was then called Elance, which is now Upworks. So I mean, my advice would be, and also there are some UK-based organizations, and they're listed, like, off the top of my head, I'm trying to remember the names of some of them, childrensillustrators.com, I think. There's another one called Behance.net, I think, over in the States. So you can go on there, and it is a bit like you go and have a look at the style, and then you see what they're charging, and you go from there, so to speak. But most of the time, or all of the time in my case, you'll end up paying for the illustrations and then owning the copyright at the end. It's not a sort of royalty share situation, because if you think about it, that's a huge risk for an illustrator. But the budget, you know, I think some illustrators will do, you know, an image for $10, or others might be $25. It's one of those things, actually, because of this global world we live in, that there's something for all budgets, but you've obviously got to find something that fits with what the design that you want for your book, and that in turn is a matter of doing all your research at the start to see what other books similar to yours, what sort of style either are they, what's selling, and so on and so forth. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, it's great, actually. And you talked there about relationship. You know, you and I have known each other a long time now, and I, it's the same with me with the cover designers, with editors. It takes a while to find people, but when you do find people, you carry on working with them. So I think that's the thing. If people listening are just starting out, it may seem difficult at the beginning, but there's these hurdles. And once you're over the hurdles, like your process flow for your books and everything is settled, as is mine.
Yes.
But I think it can seem insurmountable. But that's the print side. Let's just talk about ebooks, because many people say, oh, don't bother about ebooks for kids. So what are the different types of digital aspects, I guess?
Well, I would definitely say, whereas a few years ago when we first spoke, I might have said, look, ebooks, yes, by all means, do them, but they're definitely not a priority. Whereas today I would say, yes, definitely do an ebook, because it's another way that you can use to market your print book, if you see what I mean. And so, as we probably all know, online advertising has sort of burst onto the scenes recently through AMS ads. And certainly in the early days over in the States, when AMS ads came along, you could only advertise ebooks. And I actually happened to have them, so they were already there, and that was great. But what I found was that people, parents were finding, obviously clicking on the ad for the ebook and then buying in print. It was a sort of tool. It was a means to an end. But, you know, I had not huge sales of ebooks, although again, that's creeping up. And I would say for middle grade novels, 8 to 12, you're probably going to find you're selling, you know, once you're discovered, you will be selling in a reasonable number. Particularly, I've noticed with The Secret Lake now, it's creeping up from very few to a reasonable number each day. Now, that might just be the summer holidays are coming and people are about to go on holiday. And for that age group, particularly, that seems to be, it's picked up a bit. In terms of the tools, I mean, what's amazing now, as you know, since we probably last spoke, I mean, I remember back in the day when I did The Secret Lake, trying to work out how to make a Mobi file. Oh my God, I was there for days reading all those instructions on the KDP. Oh God. And then Vellum came along and changed my life.
We love Vellum on this podcast.
Oh God, absolutely love Vellum to bits. Brad is madly in love with them. They know, I've been telling them for years I'm going to write this book and they're going to have this great big chunk inside it, and they're so pleased. So if you have a Mac, you know, that really has revolutionized, and even to the point of Eek the Runaway Alien, Walter Brown and the Magician's Hat, which have black and white illustrations inside them, they were really easy to do on Vellum. Mm-hmm. Very easy to do. And so, okay, again, but that, even though most buy in print, I did, the only book I've ever given away, I've never given away The Secret Lake, I did give away and had a short Insta freebie with Eek, just to see, you know, whether I could get more interest over in the States in the print side. So they are good for sort of giveaway type situations. And as we probably know, BookFunnel has now come out with these print codes. So I was thinking, well, there's another good, you know, if you've got a book that you're trying to promote, perhaps you could have some little labels you could give away at schools to say, look, you can get the ebook for free, or give it to parents and they can test it and have a look at and then buy the print book ultimately for their child, that sort of thing.
Or the other thing with the ebooks, I mean, I'm happily child free, as you know, but I have nieces and nephews and I shop for them online, and you know, you can only see certain pages when you look inside, but but if you download a sample, a digital sample, you can actually see more. So I think, like you're saying, that ebook can be bought because they want to buy the ebook, or it could be a sample for the print book. So I think we're basically saying, yes, do ebooks for any of these age groups.
Yes, and it's a means to an end, really. And you will, you know, the bonus is that you will get, you know, that you might get some sales of people generally, you know, that there is a number of children who do like to read on Kindle, and so they will get them. The other thing I have done that's quite interesting is I took, because of course I don't write in a series because I'm silly, I've just done all these standalone books, which, you know, they just came to me, but by accident rather than design, they go across all the different age groups, which at least means when I go into schools, I can often go and see the whole school. So to that extent, it works. But what I have done is with three of them, so with The Secret Lake, Eek the Runaway Alien and Walter Brown and the Magician's Hat, because those are roughly the same age group, sort of 7, 8 to 11, I have taken the first three chapters of each of those because vellum is so easy to use, and created what I want to call a box set sample.
And I've made it free
on. I set it free. That's the only place where I'm wide at the moment. I made it free. And of course, Amazon has price matched. And I just thought, well, actually, that's again another way of using it as a marketing tool, because then that's got links to obviously the fact that the print books are available, the full versions of them. So that was the sort of closest I've come to mimicking what people who write for adults have been doing with their, first in a series, if you see what I mean. Just on that, just using again, so ebooks are good for sort of taste to marketing, I suppose, is what I would say.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. Okay, well, let's stay on marketing, because one of the things that, again, people say is, oh, it's so hard to market children's books because you can't market to your audience. It's like it's unethical to advertise directly to children, and half the time you can't reach them directly. So there's obviously the two sides of marketing, the digital marketing and then the in-person marketing. So let's start with the digital. You've mentioned a couple of things, but what's the reality of digital marketing for children's books? Are you just targeting adults, or how are you doing that?
I'm just the most successful, I would say, is AMS, and so obviously I'm targeting adults just by targeting books that are similar to my books on Amazon. I would say, there's the whole thing of Facebook, and I've tried Facebook over the years. I tried it back in the very early days, 2011-12, or whenever it was first allowed, and I've tried it more recently as well. When it's become where you can, I haven't found a way to make money from it. I've just found a way that Facebook takes my money.
but you have found AMS. AMS works for you.
Yes. Yeah, so what I'd say is you have to try these things to find out. And the thing is, you can, with Facebook advertising, target people with children aged 8 to 12 and who like Enid Blyton and this and that, and think, oh, gosh, this is going to work. But it hasn't worked for me. And I don't know many children's authors, who have said it has worked for them, other than that big book called Lost My Name, wonderfully was. But even they at London Book Fair this year were talking about how the cost per acquisition of customer was very, very big on Facebook. I got the impression they were, they've got £1 million budgets and things. And I think the reason that particular book worked was because it's a personalised book. So it was quite an unusual product. Now, that's not to say I won't go back, because I think, and I did try when I had the app targeting grandparents, because we know that grandparents have more time. And so that is something I will perhaps go back and look at. But, being a children's author, as anyone will tell you, you're so busy physically getting the books out and then spending time getting events organized and then going to the events, there's only so many hours in the day, as it were. So, but yes, if you AMS ads, I would say, out of all of them, and best done when you've already established yourself and got, some decent reviews on the books. But as you know, you can control the budget anyway. You can just turn it off.
And just for people who don't know, so Amazon Marketing Services, and you can basically pick a book, so like The Gruffalo, and you can say, I want my book to appear underneath The Gruffalo, so that basically you choose the books you're targeting. And you mentioned that, I can't remember which book, but that you're seeing a lot more success recently. So is that purely because of AMS, you think?
I think so. I mean, what's happened with The Secret Lake is it's always been my bestseller. And it's a traditional story, which I didn't think there were enough of around. And when I go to school events, it always sells probably almost double any of the other book. And I get teachers mentioning it to me. It was considered, it was also read by the head of independent commissioning at CBBC many years ago. I say many years, about 3 years ago, 4 years ago. I met her at an event and mentioned it to her. And she said, oh, send it to me. And I thought I won't hear anything. And she emailed me within a few weeks to say, I really enjoyed it. And it actually very much would lend itself to something like BBC TV. And she said, because I'm head of independent commissioning, I'm not the person to go to because I'm the independent. But she said you can either go direct to BBC or you can go via an independent commissioning firm. And so I did go direct to BBC, and it took a while. And in the end, they didn't go with it because they've got so many things. And there is that other, but they said, you know, she said, go the other route as well. And I just haven't had time to do that. But sort of coming back to your question, I think it is a very special story, and it's just never been able to be seen on Amazon. People can't find it. I think what it's done is, because I'd already sold about 7,000 copies by the time I started doing AMS ads, it had proven itself that it is a good story. It was just that it's a good story if you know it's there. And what AMS does, and I think this applies for everyone, and we all know it, is it puts us on a level playing field with other publishers, because we can put our books on that front table in the same way that they can when you go into a shop. And so then it's down to, okay, how good's the cover? How good's the blurb? How good's the story? And are you targeting the right people? And that's what it is at the end of the day. Very quickly after AMS opened in the UK to me, and I've been trying to get into it for ages, but it kept asking me for a VAT number, and I had deregistered for VAT about 3 months before. And it was when they finally realised that you didn't, you know, they stopped you having to be registered for VAT that I got on. And very quickly I saw the numbers starting to creep up, you know. Noticeable, actually.
You mentioned the front table in the bookstore there. Very importantly, if people don't know, you pay for the front, you know, table in a bookstore, and you pay for Amazon ads. So it's definitely like you've done a testing and, you know, worked out what works and what books to put it on. So, and we've had podcasts about Amazon ads before, so we won't go into that anymore. Okay. So let's talk about in-person marketing. So the schools, like, to me, that just sounds like so much work for very little return. So what do you think about the schools side of things?
Yeah, no, I think it's great. You say you have very little return. You actually make a much bigger return when you're selling your books at schools, because there's no middleman. Okay, so, you know, my book at $6.99, The Secret Lake, maybe it's cost me £2 to create it. So when I sell it, if I sell it at full price, I'm getting a £4 profit, which is a lot more than I will get when I'm selling online. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that, you know, you can sell a lot, and, you know, if you do it properly, and it takes time, you've got to build it up, and you've got to do a really good, you know, you've got to give them a good run for, you know, a good performance, as it were. But you can sell a lot of books, and also you charge for your time. I mean, only in the very first few visits that do you do it for nothing. And I you know, talk about when you're building your confidence locally, you can offer to do a visit, you know, here and there to build your confidence. But now if I go to a school, I will be charging either a day or a half day. And that will vary according to the school. If I know it's a state school with a small budget, I'll adjust it. You know, it just depends on how far you're going. So you are getting paid for your time as well as selling the books. And even, you know, how many books you sell sometimes depends on how organized the school is. You know, you can sell 100 in a day, or you might only sell 35. But at the end of the day, that's 35 more children who've seen your book. And the word of mouth is really how, you know, people start to know you. But it is a long, you know, it is a slow and gradual process. There's no sort of race to market with it. But I think most children's authors will be writing because that's what they want to do, and they're very keen to see children enjoy a story and to encourage reading. So it's not a chore. The hardest part is probably ringing round and contacting schools and getting the bookings. But now I'm at the stage where people contact me. I've already been contacted a few weeks ago by a school in Herefordshire saying, oh, we love Ferdinand Fox. Would you come to our school in the deeps of Hereford? I said, well, I'd love to come, but, you know, we'd need to find another school, and I'd have to come for the whole day. And by the way, and because I've got this all set up now, I just said, here's my books overview. Here's my school visit format. I could do the whole school. Now, if we can find another school nearby, now that's already now been sorted out. So I've got 2 days in Hereford. A friend of mine happens to live just outside Hereford, so I stay with him. It's because I said, look, you know, I actually have to have a friend there. So, but they, you know, they come to me now, rather. It's not all me having to find, you know.
Yeah. Well, I had no idea you would get paid for that. I doubt if it's thousands and thousands of.
Oh no, it'll be between dollars. I mean, the society of authors, I think when I last looked up their page, although I don't know if it was out of date, it was said that a typical author's day rate should be between 400 and 1,000, depending on, you know, whether you're David Williams or a mid-list unknown author. Well, I know anecdotally that you know, people will charge between 300, 450 a day, that sort of thing. And that's the kind of thing I'm charging just because I feel I'm very conscious of school budgets at the moment. Mm. If I was asked to go a long, long way to a very wealthy school, then I'd probably charge more. Oh, and talking of going a long way, I just have to tell you this. I was contacted earlier this year and asked if I would consider going over to Sao Paulo to do
Marvelous.
All expenses paid. Flights, the whole thing, for World Book Day week, and it was down to between me and someone. And I said, "We'd love to," but in fact, it didn't come off. There was between me and one other author who turned out to be. She was traditionally published. Her husband was the illustrator, and the books went in with the curriculum. So it was fine, but it was very flattering.
That's fantastic.
It was amazing. Although I did then think, actually, it's World Book Day week when I'm always completely booked, and I probably ultimately would have lost money by going rather than doing all, because I did about 8 school visits this World Book Day week, you know, all around that time. But you know, even so, you know, this is how things slowly evolve over time.
That's so interesting, because again, so many people think the life of a writer is just the writing, obviously there's a lot of an unexpected amount of work that goes into a 500 word picture book, but yes. So much of what you're talking about is the production and the marketing and the outreach and the relationships and all of that type of thing, which just I guess I wanted to ask you on that. You've mentioned some figures, and you've said to me before, the number of sales that you get as a children's author just doesn't compare to other genres. So what are the myths or the mistakes or the things that you think people always get wrong about it?
Well, I think most people coming in to write for children probably have no idea how many books they're going to sell. If, you know, unless if they know the children's market, they'll know. But I mean, certainly, and I'm guessing it still holds true, certainly for picture books, I was told very early on that, you know, you'll be lucky if you sell, you know, a couple of hundred, you know, unless you're Julia Donaldson. But I've proved that you can sell more than that. I should have looked at my figures before we spoke, but actually I have got some here. I'm just trying to see. This was back in, so Ferdinand Fox's Big Sleep, total print sales, that was 874 that was in February of this year. I know it'll be not much more at the moment because it's the Hedgehog one has taken over, but that, you know, that's nothing compared with what you'll be selling as an ebook. You're writing for YA and adult ebooks, you'll just be selling a lot more. So that's the first thing to understand. But equally, that said, you know, The Secret Lake is now selling a heck of a lot. It's selling, you know, I think it's sold this month alone on Amazon, it sold something like 1,800 copies. You know, which would have been unheard of before, but it's because it's been discovered. So it is possible. I don't know if I've answered your questions.
Well, just any more mistakes or, you know, things that new children's authors get wrong or surprises that we might not have covered?
The main thing, as I say, is just knowing that the main way you're going to sell is by going out and doing those events. And it's hard. But it's because schools are busy. like busy places, so you've just got to find your way in and be patient. And the other things I've done, which is not just school events, there will be local events which you might think in first sight aren't worth doing. So to give an example, last year, no, it would have been 2016, it was the 50th anniversary of the World Cup. England winning the World Cup, and they had a family day down the road here at the local sports centre, and I took a table there because Eek is about an alien who runs away from space to Earth because he's mad about football and the World Cup's on. So I thought, well, I'll go down there and get a table, and it cost me £15 for that table, and I was there for 9 o'clock till about 5:30. Bob popped down a couple of times. I think I sold 30 books, so and it was £15 for the table, so I made about £15. So we were joking about my hourly rate, you know. But having said that, one of the little girls who bought my book went back to her school, who then contacted me and said, so-and-so's bought The Secret Lake. She really loved it. And she would you come and do World Book Day for us? So I ended up doing World Book Day for them, which was a paid event and selling to the whole school. And on top of that, I had this Barry Davis, quite famous World Cup commentator from 1966. I got a picture of him holding Eek because he was commentating for this event. And I've got a picture of him with Eek, which I used at the time. And now with the World Cup having just come around, I've sent a couple of tweets out with pictures of, oh, here's my fan Barry Davis back again, you know. So there are things you do where you don't make a lot of money, but later on, you know, they're all part of that mix. But I would say it's definitely with children's books, it's definitely not a race to market. It's passion and being patient with it, and don't give up the day job, if you see what I mean.
Definitely, yeah, and have a long-term view, basically.
Absolutely long-term view, absolutely.
No, that's fantastic. And I mean, final question, you're very well connected, you go to all these events, you live in London, you're also very professional, and, you know, because you've worked in finance, you know all the figures, you are, you know, when you talk to publishers and things, you give a very good representation, I think, of yourself, and also indie writers. So I wondered, like, with all your connections that you have and the fact that you decided not to go back to traditional, do you see the attitude changing towards indie children's writers and illustrators? Or do you think it's kind of getting even worse because the biggest children's authors are all, you know, famous, like David Walliams, for example?
Well, the answer is, in some ways, I don't really know, because I'm not pursuing a traditional publishing, so I don't sort of come into contact with them hugely. I mean, what I would say is that the wider attitudes are definitely much better than they were. So, for example, I ran a session at the Barnes Children's Literature Festival this year. I had a packed tent. There were probably about 50 people there, and the subject was how to self-publish and market a children's book. It was a session, a paid session, and it was a sellout. Now, when I first did that festival a few years ago, you know, the idea that someone might be talking about children's self-publishing would have been,
especially in Barnes.
Absolutely, especially in Barnes. But actually, to be fair to them, you know, they, that first year when it first started, and it's now become the biggest children's festival in the UK, I was a local author, and they welcomed me, and I had a session there. I mean, it wasn't paid, but that was fine. And I've been there every year since. So to that extent, yes. And I think always my experience has been that schools are agnostic about whether you're self-published or not, and some actively support self-published children's books, authors rather. I spoke to, there's a school in Kingston called Holy Cross that I went to a few years ago, and I rang them just before the summer holidays just to say, you know, I thought you might be interested to know that The Secret Lake is now, you know, seems to have taken off, because they were so supportive of me. And, you know, she was delighted to hear, and she said, oh yes, we've got another self-published author coming in, we like to support them. So schools have always been very supportive. I think the local media have, and up to a point, I think probably national media. It is just things like, there is a things like the National, I want to say the Literacy Trust, I'm trying to remember their exact name. They are a charity that helps, you know, encourage reading for, you know, all children. I've had problems getting my, you know, now, you know, my books are quite established and have been for quite a long time. And I've contacted them previously to say, would you consider including EEC in your reluctant readers recommendations? And I've sort of come up against a brick wall. And I, you know, I think there's still a bit of that in the working area of traditional publishing. But then you get fantastic people like Sam Lissingham, who is, you know, she's from the traditional world, and she's now started, I think it's Lounge Books, isn't it? Where she's agnostic as to who's there. You know, it is changing, but it's a slow release on that side, on the traditional publisher's side. But I think eventually it's all going to just merge into one. And you know, it was quite interesting, as you probably saw at Thrillerfest this year, that Mark Dawson, or James rather, have been interviewing, you know, all these traditionally published, Lee Child and all that lot. I mean, there, I just think there's this whole thing of everything colliding together, and it's going to, from the bottom up, we're all going to come together and just probably, you know, not blow it out of the water. I don't want that to make it sound negative, but I think slowly, you know, we know that the freelancers are all on Readsy now, and they're from traditional publishing houses. It's all going to melt together, I think.
I think that's a good way.
I might be being optimistic, but it certainly has moved on. Because just last point on that, when I did go and give a talk at Penguin, it was called the Children's Book Circle. I think it was back in 2013. They were asking about self-publishing. And at the time I said to them, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of freelance work for editors coming your way. And that was before, you know, that was just at that moment where it was all starting to change. And I just suddenly thought, yes, all these people in the traditional world, they're going to start jumping on the bandwagon in a good way, you know. So I just like to see a little bit more with the, maybe some of the book selling press, as it were, I suppose. Dawn Books, very receptive when I spoke to them recently, you know, so yeah.
Things are definitely changing. Fantastic. So we are out of time. So where can people find you and your books online?
Okay, so they can find my children's books. I've got, my website is KarenInglisAuthor.com, and of course I have a Karen Inglis page on Amazon, so they can go there to see print and ebooks. They can read about, can I hold my card up for my new book? So this will be out as an ebook at the end of this month, but actually the print book won't be out until September because it's so much work and so much was changing at the last minute, not least things like ConvertKit suddenly deciding to rebrand itself.
Oh yes, that's Amazon, fun.
Amazon deciding, you know, there's all this funny stuff to do with reviews, and that there was enough important things changing that I thought, oh, I don't want to go and publish this in a hurry not to include those things. So I had hope for a June publication, but ebook now going out, fingers crossed, 31st of July, it'll be available. But I imagine it would be much better as a print book. I would personally want the print book, but there we go.
But it will be a great ebook as well.
Yes, I'm so useless at marketing. So hopefully by the time this goes out, which I think might be in September, the print book will either be out or nearly out, and it will have the page going up, and it will be under the name Karen P. Inglis, P for Patricia Inglis, because I don't want the self-publishing book to sit there as this sort of tomb sitting there in front of all my children's books when people go to my Amazon page.
Yes, they're also bought.
Yeah, exactly. So Rachel Alston has just sent me, actually, she's just put a P in my name, so I can at least create the ebook page for now, and the print book will be available later.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for your time, Karen. That was great.
All right. Well, thank you, Joanna.
So I hope you enjoyed the interview with Karen today. And if you write children's books, then hopefully it was super useful and you got lots of ideas. So remember to register for the free webinar with me and Nick Stevenson this week, the three-step system to automate your author marketing and find your first 10,000 readers, all about building and growing your email list. And as I said, it will be really fun as well as useful and informative. I will have a gin and tonic. We will answer your book marketing questions live, or you can get the recording. You can register at thecreativepen.com/August16, or just get the link in the show notes. So next week, I have an interview on branding for authors with the wonderful Christine Catherine Rush. And Chris continues to be a mentor to me through her books and her courses. And I've been to Chris and Dean's live events, and I just learned so much from them. And I'm always thrilled to have Chris on the show. Her new nonfiction book, Creating Your Author Brand, is super useful. So we'll be talking about that, and I'm excited to bring that interview to you next week. So have a wonderful writing week, and I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes and show notes available at thecreativepen.com/podcast. You can also get your free author blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.